Chairperson, members, ladies and gentlemen. The first slide on our presentation should be read in conjunction with pages 30 to 39 of the of our the strategic plan document. We have five strategic objectives as the branch of the United States. The first one is to promote health and safety, ready to prevent harm to the mine employees. Second is to contribute skills development, which will also assist us in improving the health and safety within the mining sector, and ensure compliance with the service level agreements. The service level agreement which we have with the relevant entities to improve on the capacity challenges that we are having internally, and also to develop a, fourthly, to develop a review and internal processes. This is really to ensure that there's a consistent and a transparent approach on the way that we do as inspectors, by all inspectors, and also to improve the turnaround time on all the administrative tasks that we are doing to improve on service delivery. In terms of the promotion on health and safety, the measure is really the percentage reduction on occupational fatalities, injuries, and dangerous occurrences. We are planning to reduce this by 20% each year. The dangerous occurrences are incidents which do not result in casualties. In other words, they don't result in injuries or fatalities, but they do have a potential to cause harm. And in terms of health as well, the measure is a percentage reduction on overexposure to silica. We believe that if we strive to reduce the exposure to silica, we'll have a significant and sustainable reduction in silicosis within the sector, especially the gold sector. Thirdly, the percentage reduction in overexposure to noise as well. We believe that if we reduce the noise exposure of employees, will prevent noise-induced hearing loss. And our target on both is 10% improvement per annum. This has been worked on the base of last year that we've actually looked at the current compliance levels, and then we're working for the next 3 years. The initiatives to deal with those first three measures, we plan to conduct investigations and inquiries. That you can also, in fact, look at page 30 of the document. The annual report. Okay, thank you. Basically, what is important I wanted to highlight is that to achieve those measures, there are initiatives that we are looking at. First of all, to conduct investigations and inquiries, ready to prevent similar or recurrence of accidents, and when necessary, recommend prosecution if we have found that there has been negligence in parts of the mine. Secondly, to conduct qualitative inspections and audits to ensure compliance with the provisions of the law. We'll monitor compliance in terms of inspections and audits, and also implement our health and safety strategy. Our health and safety strategy, there's a wide range of initiatives that we are looking at to make sure that we have a significant and sustainable improvement on health and safety, and implement the enforcement guideline, which really is to assist us in having a consistent and approach and a transparent approach across all the regions that we are having, 10 regions currently, and disseminate health and safety information. We believe that it's very, very important that we should share information on the concerns that we have on health and safety through newsletters. We have quarterly newsletters, and where necessary, we also share information through news flashes. For instance, if there was an incident which we think the industry should take note of to prevent recurrence, then we prepare a news flash and we circulate it through the industry. And lastly, we also plan to do quarterly workshops involving management and unions, and share this information with them to try and prevent the harm. And lastly, on that, in terms of initiatives, we make input into the legislative framework, the review thereof, to enforce, to strengthen enforcement capacity and remove ambiguities. And just going back to that, to the slide, as you can clearly see, we also the previous one, the previous slide. No, the next one. Sorry. Yes, we planned about 8,000 inspections per year to conduct based on the budget that we also have, and we plan 396 audits. We normally do group audits as well as inspectors per year that we should really do. And lastly, on that slide, we also plan to do 100% compliance to enforcement guidelines. I think it will help for us to have a consistent approach. Next one. In terms of the contribution to skills development, we as the department, there's several examinations that we administer. There's mine managers, there's the engineering one, there's mine overseers, and there's winder engine drivers, driver ones, there's survey examinations that we administer as a department. But one of the concerns that we have identified is the failure rate of those certificates. Some of them, the pass rate is about 5%, and we have strategized to look at the current examination model that we are using in conjunction with the universities and also University of Technology to help us looking at how we are doing the administration of these certificates to see if we can have an improvement on that. And last on that slide, we're also planning to work with the Mining Qualification Authority, that is the MQA, and other relevant stakeholders to really to help us in terms of this particular challenge that we are facing. And that next one, I've referred to the SLAs that we have. We currently have two SLAs, one with West University and the other one with one of the mining companies for Goldfields. The West University is mainly to assist us with our training of our inspectors on the procedures that we are looking at and the legal provisions as well. So we currently have an SLA with them. Similarly with Goldfields, we now and again have an intake of learner inspectors. That is, we take people who don't have experience but have, let's say, degrees and diplomas. We place them at Goldfields for 2 years to acquire that practical experience, and then after 2 years we place them at the regional offices to assist them to acquire their full qualification, and then they can be inspectors. So we'll make sure that there is presidential adherence to those SLAs. In terms of development and review of the internal processes, we plan to have a 100% review and implementation of those processes. This speaks to the internal policies, procedures, and as I've said before, it deals with the issues of consistency and transparency. Lastly, the same with the improvement turnaround times. We are looking at an 80% achievement on all the applications that we are dealing with, or any administrative work that we are dealing with. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We will then move to mineral regulation. DDG will present. Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, and ladies and gentlemen. I will be taking Honorable Members through Program 3, which is Mineral Regulation. Now, in terms of the presentation, on the first slide, we should read this presentation together with pages 40 up to pages 50 of the strategic plan of the department. Pages 40 to pages 50. In terms of the strategic objectives of the program, we are focusing firstly on job creation, where through the issuing of mining and prospecting rights, as well as the implementation of social labor plan, we contribute to job creation. The second strategic objective is around promotion of sustainable resource management, which speaks, among others, to optimal mining, as well as the adherence to approved environmental management plans and programs. The third strategic objective speaks to ensuring implementation of transformation policies, which speak, among others, to the implementation of the mining charter. The fourth strategic objective speaks to monitoring and enforcement of compliance, which speaks to ensuring that the levels of compliance within industry are improved and increased. The fifth one, which is an internally focused one, is outlining the strategic plan, also speaking to the development and the review of internal processes to improve on service delivery. And the sixth one, speaking to reduction of state environmental liability and financial risk to prevent some of the challenges that we are all aware of around legacy issues with regard to environmental challenges, where some mines are inadequately funded with regard to their environmental liabilities. Next slide. Around the equitable and sustainable benefit from mineral resources, the first area there with regard to job creation, as I indicated, we will need to read the presentation together with the relevant pages in the strategic plan document, which starts on page 40. The figure as outlined in the strategic plan document relating to the projected number of jobs is aligned to projections that are informed, among others, by the new growth path. And the number of jobs, as we have in the document, from mining, new mining rights, this we will achieve in terms of our plans through adjudication of applications for new mining rights, including social and labor plans and EMPs, which in terms of our plans are given priority. And secondly, around increased compliance inspections on the implementation of the mining works programs, the third environmental management program, as well as social and labor plans. This element also links up with the benefit of conducting depend on increased inspections, because if you improve on enforcement also, there are just benefits of job creation. The second area with regard to promotion of job creation would be through implementation of SMME development projects. Here, too, it also links up with increased compliance inspections that we will also be conducting in terms of our plans, so that we can realize the necessary jobs. The other one is around local economic development projects through increased compliance inspections also, so that we can then have certainty that the social and labor plan projects are indeed implemented, because when they are implemented, the jobs that are committed in the approved social and labor plans therefore also get implemented. Next slide. around equitable and sustainable benefit from mineral resources. What we will be seeking to do here are first is around promotion of sustainable resource use and management. We plan to focus on the percentage of evaluated work program relative to rights issues, basically adjudicating the relevant work program linked to a right and verify this through the necessary inspections. The second area would also be around the percentage of approved social and labor plans that are relative to the rights. These are the mining rights that are issued. The key issue here is around adjudication of social and labor plans to ensure that they are aligned to the IDPs and verify their implementation also through inspections. We keep on emphasizing inspections because that's where you are able to determine on site the number of jobs and the actual implementation of a committed and approved project. The other one is around percentage of approved environmental management programs and plans relative to the issued rights, the programs that apply to mining rights and plans to prospecting rights. And here in the adjudication of the EMPs, we also plan to conduct further inspections to ensure that the EMPs are aligned to reality and you don't find instances where you are provided or supplied with an EMP and which is on an environmentally sensitive area, for example. With regard to the next strategic objective around equitable and sustainable benefit from mineral resources, the key is to reduce state environmental liability and financial risk. Here we plan to focus on the percentage, of rights and permits with the adequate financial provision for rehabilitation to address some of the concerns that honorable members had raised at this portfolio committee around, rights and permits with inadequate financial provision, which when closed create all kinds of challenges that honorable members are fully aware of. And I wouldn't want to cite an example lest I create a... Yeah. The second one is around the review of the environmental management program, focusing on the financial provision and the performance assessment report. Here from our previous experiences and looking at the various outcomes of audits and inspections that we've conducted, we had identified a particular challenge around areas where some of the mines do possess liabilities which are not adequately covered by the financial provision that we have. And there is a program that we have put in place to address this, and the minister would be elaborating on some elements of it in the budget vote speech. It basically relates to the plans that we have put in place around addressing this to prevent some of the challenges that are known. The other area is around percentage of mines issued with the closure without residual state liability. And here the focus is around assessing closure application in line with Section 43, of the MPRDA, which then implies that we need to satisfy ourselves before a closure certificate is issued that there will not be any comebacks to the state with regard to residual state liability. Around transformation of the mineral sector, the objective here is around ensuring implementation of the transformation policies. The measures that we have put in place focus on the number of rights that are granted to new historical disadvantaged South Africans. And the initiative that we have here is to implement initiatives aimed at facilitating entry of historical disadvantaged South Africans, HDSAs, into the mining sector. The other measure is also around you know, around the number of consultations that we're going to be having with communities. And the figure that we have in terms of target is 50, which is based on available resources. As my colleagues from other programs were saying, with resources, more resources, obviously you can, you know, you can do more. The other initiative in sort of measure that we have is around the number of industry workshops that we plan to put in place. These two is based on available resources. We are planning to have 9, and as much as we plan to have 9, depending on, based on the nature of our sector, should then a need arise in between, there is always an opportunity to partner or find a way creatively of conducting other workshops, even if it implies that we participate at workshops organized elsewhere, just to communicate and clarify as part of service delivery and stakeholder management. Okay. Still on ensuring implementation of transformation policies, and linked or aligned to the mining charter, are elements relating to procurement. What we're going to be doing as part of our plan for this year is to ensure that the percentage procurement spent on HDSA by right holders of mining companies is aligned to the mining charter. This is a compliance issue, so it therefore is one where if honorable members would also look at the start plan, it's aligned to what is in the mining charter, which is 100% compliance, because it cannot or it can never be anything below the compliance requirement, which is linked to the issued right. And the other initiative that we have put in place is one of conducting a procurement a summit for the year. It also speaks to some of the issues arising from the State of the Nation address, as well as the debate that took place. Around internal processes, which speaks to monitoring and enforcement of compliance, our program, you know, seeks to achieve, 100% compliance with the regulatory requirements, which are various. There are a number of mining charter legal compliance inspections, which cover various disciplines around social and labor plans, black economic empowerment, mineral laws, etc. And we have planned to conduct 650 inspections collectively, which is informed by resources. As the CFO was presenting earlier on, he emphasized the need to align programs with budgets, and our plans are informed also by our spending plans that we have in place. And I need to also emphasize some of the benefits that accrue from compliance inspections, because one of them is when you conduct, depend or conduct inspections, you are able to ensure that approved social labor plans are implemented, which have the benefit of job creation, enterprise development, etc. You are also able to prevent environmental degradation that often arise from non-compliance with the EMPs, some cases, and better or monitor suboptimal mining or mining that is not aligned with the mining works program, where in some cases you find that the mining methodologies may have changed and or the tonnages or volumes are not aligned to the approved mining works program, which working backwards are also not aligned to environmental management, approved environmental management program, also not aligned to the determined financial quantum for environmental liability and rehabilitation. So all these are linked. Now, around the number of environmental management plan or program inspections that we had planned for the current year, we have planned 1,500, also informed by available resources. The other area is part of the internal business process that we have in place is around improving adherence to prescribed timeframes for various types of services that we render in the adjudication process, from granting and or refusing and issuing of rights, etc., etc. We're planning to achieve a 70% target for the current year. And around the percentage of revenue collected, which speaks to the various types of revenues that we collect as part of our work, we're projecting a 70%. This links also to the work that, as some of the system that the CFO spoke to earlier on around what we have in place with regard to revenues, your prospecting fees, etc., etc. And next slide. Okay. Yeah. There are a few HR related issues which also as outlined in the strategic plan document, which are cross-cutting and basically aligned to what the other colleagues from other programs had indicated. Relating to the number of executive management programs that we have put in place. But if there are questions, Chair, I can take them later on. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Member. We will then listen to Program 4, Mineral Policy and Promotion. The acting DDG will present. Mr. Nep.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of Parliament, and members of the organizations from the public for this opportunity to present to you. It is indeed an honor to be having the government of South Africa. Ladies and gentlemen, our program is Mineral Policy and Investment Promotion, and then it's structured into four chief directories. And then those four chief directories are as follows. It's mineral policy, which is responsible for drafting policy and amending legislations such as MPRPA and mining health and safety. The other chief directorate is called mineral promotion, which is responsible for promoting minerals. By the way, it can refer, all day it's written for you. You can refer from pages 51 to page 61. And the other chief directorate is called Economic Advisory Services, of which I'm normally or regularly the chief director to that component. And the last chief directorate is called Mine Environmental Management. And this is according to the structure that has been approved by the DPSA. But I'm sure honorable members are also quite aware that the situation has been volatile and fluid in the sense that I think since 2008 we have been having an acting DDG because the DDG was seconded to another state-owned enterprise. And then also the chief director for mine environmental management, we haven't been able to fill that vacant position due to funding challenges. And then there could be also other directors for small scale mining, which has not been field as well, and mineral economics. So I'm just setting the scene, honourable members, for you to understand the sensitive environment that we operate in. And then those are the strategic objectives of the program, that is mineral policy and promotion. The first one is to promote investment in the mining and minerals sector. And then the second objective is to promote sustainable resource use and management. And the third one is transformation of the mining and mineral sector. And the fifth strategic objective is to always be in the mode of a learning organization to look and develop, review internal processes within our program in conjunction with also working closely with our other sister programs such as mineral regulation and so on and so forth.
as well as the other strategic objective is to improve turnaround of times in terms of service to the stakeholders that are being regulated by our Department of Mineral Resources. And then if we go over to the next slide, we are planning this particular financial year in our annual performance plan to publish 85 publications, and the number of strategic and technical partnerships that we seek to maintain, we already have those, is 7 of them, and we're still continuing quite well with them. And we are planning to support and sustain small medium enterprises up to 67. Some we've been with them for quite a while, but others will be coming in on the mainstream of their work. And also we're looking forward towards the end of this year, before even the turn of 2012 into 2013, to have completed 3 value chains for the implementation of the beneficiation strategy. Those value chains are the ones on autocatalytic or on PGM value chain, that is platinum group of metals, and the other one on the jewelry, and the other one on energy minerals. The other two have already been approved by cabinet. And from looking at the stakeholder perspective of the department, as I already mentioned in the other strategic objective, we seek to promote the sustainable resource management. And in this, we look at developing a framework for mine environmental management. In that way, we will be addressing issues around sustainable mining industry. And in this, what we have in mind is the concept, or not so much a concept, but something which is already happening. Issues around concurrent rehabilitation. As mine companies are mining, they shouldn't say no, they will only rehabilitate at the end of the lifetime of the mine. And also we're looking at addressing issues around mine dams and tailings. And in that way, we seek to reclaim some of the minerals which are still there. And the current activity in that regard, we have been auditing the mine dams around the Gauteng province. And then we have established only about one mine dam, which seems to be ownerless. And that's where we think we're going to be coming in. We have identified that in this area of mine dams, there's quite some things that can be done. I recall a week ago, I even visited a mining area in Randfontein, where an Australian company is doing quite well in terms of reclaiming some minerals in these mine dams. It's called Minting, an Australian company in that Randfontein area. And then one of the other areas that we focus on in terms of sustainable resource management is that area of reducing the number of derelict and ownerless mines. And as you've heard during the morning when our CFO was presenting the financial budget, a lot of money has been taken away from other budget to bring it into this program in order to really bring some traction around solving this problem of mine rehabilitation of owners and direct mines. It's quite a tough task, ladies and gentlemen, but we hope as we present here and you give us those probing questions, we will be able to crack it. Also with your understanding that the limitations that we have in terms of funding and personnel, etc. So we're planning to rehabilitate about 12 sites in this particular year, and we're working closely with other state-owned enterprises such as the Council for Geoscience as well as the MinTech to assist us in this regard, as they are more well-placed in terms of facilitating procurement of services that can actually turn around this problem of ownerless and direct mines. I think you know already that we always talk of 6,000 mines, but our CFO has been really helping us a great deal to have a good handle on that issue in terms of how do we provide for that contingent liability, as he likes to call it. And then the other area, ladies and gentlemen, I think it's acid mine drainage management. In this area, ladies and gentlemen, we're working quite very closely with the Department of Water Affairs and Environment, as well as the Department of Science and Technology. This is the work which has been prompted or mandated by the Interministerial Committee, which was established in 2010, if I'm not mistaken, when the whole issue of acid mine drainage was really in the public space, honorable members. And here we are also participating through our various members of staff at the department on research on the mine water management. And we are, I think the report is going to be released one of these days. And if I recall, our minister will be meeting the other minister either today or part of this week. And after that, I should suppose that the interministerial report on AMG will be published or something like that. And then, ladies and gentlemen, going to the area of implementation of solutions, we are busy with other institutions, organizations in the Florida Canal area, as well as filling the abandoned shafts on Alexandria. But also this is the work that we achieve through implementing agents such as the Council for Geoscience, as well as MINTEC. And then the other work that we are feeding into as the regulator is that area of treatment of AMD itself, where such operations as turning that water into soluble, into water that can be of use either as drinking or as water that can be restored back into the river system in a way that does not lead to the decimation of life in the water system. So the other area of our program, Mineral Pools and Promotion, honorable members, is that one of ensuring transformation in the mining and mineral sector. And then in this area, as I've already mentioned earlier on when I was introducing the structure of our branch, this is where we are busy with work such as reviewing of the MPRDA as well as the resultant amendment bill of the MPRDA. And as matters stand now, we are at a stage where the amendment bill has been drafted. And also we are quite running fast and furious around the whole issue of mine health and safety amendment bill as well. And it has also been drafted, but also we hope that this particular year, before the turn of this year, we would have achieved that work in order that we can reduce the regulatory uncertainty in those aspects. And ladies and gentlemen, the other area which is done by our program is that area of doing just research studies, well, to build on what is already there in the department in terms of a directory of BE mining companies, as well as, you know, having this as public available information for publication, as some of the publication I mentioned earlier on. And also one of the targets in the branch within the economic advisory services is to do a baseline study on transformation in the mining industry. And in all this work that we do, we are also helped and assisted by the PPC itself when they also call our clients that we regulate to also address them, where are we going, because sometimes there could be those challenges of sharing freely information between the regulator and the regulated people and other institutions. So we are gaining ground there, and we feel comfortable that we are progressing quite okay. And then the last, not the last slide, but the next slide is the one which talks to promote and transform the mineral industry. This is the core activity also of our Mineral Promotion Chief Directorate, where they also attend international conferences and so on and so forth, and support the minister, as other chief directors also support the ministry in terms of even research. This component employs a lot of highly technical people, people like geologists, mineral economists, metallurgists, those sort of hard science type of people. And
we also, in this component, have our statistics people, that the statistics that are published by Statistics South Africa would have been collected and processed by this component. So here we have those important outcomes, like improving the turnaround times by adhering to prescribed times, for example, 95%, because here we also deal with outside stakeholders, the mining companies that have to file returns with our department, and thereby be efficient to provide a public service to the government by providing the statistics to the various forms and returns. Honorable members and ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much once more for the opportunity to present to you. I look forward to also your probing or helping questions in order to achieve our work. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. We will then listen to our last presentation on corporate services. It will be presented by DDG, Ms. Kamel.
Chairperson and honourable members, our presentation outline, as you can see on the screen there, we'll look at the purpose and structure, our branch key focus areas, which are stakeholder perspective, internal processes, DMR learning and growth. Stakeholder perspective focuses mainly externally, whilst internal processes and DMR learning and growth will focus on both internal and external. The presentation should be read in conjunction with pages 6 to 12 and 16 to 22 of the tabled annual performance plan. As we are aware, under corporate services, we have five directorates: human resource, legal service. Under human resource, we basically have human resource management, human resource development, organizational development, as well as employee relations. We have legal services, which is also two-pronged, one related to mineral regulation legal issues, and one related to mine health and safety. Under auxiliary support, we have facilities management. We have transport management as well as our registry. Then we have communications and special projects, which I must also add focuses mainly on external projects. Our objectives, a stakeholder perspective. Under stakeholder perspective is to contribute to skills development by way of career awareness initiatives and the acquisition of bursaries for learners from poor backgrounds, and also to implement a graduate placement program and mining sector internships. These are programs that are, as I said, externally focused, looking at, as you can see the next point there, looking at vulnerable groups, and by that we mean women, youth, and the disabled. So all those projects are facilitated for these vulnerable groups. On the next slide, we have also communication, which focuses mainly on the external stakeholder, where we're looking to implement our communication strategy, where we would facilitate media and stakeholder engagements and facilitate public participation programs. Our communication strategy is mainly to alert, you know, the public out there, our stakeholders out there, on the programs the department is running, on, you know, all the endeavors the department it gets into by way of, you know, reaching our mandate, achieving our mandate, and also by you know, providing a regulatory framework that is suitable to the conduct of their businesses out there. Our public participation participation programs also focuses on our stakeholders also, who mainly are beneficiaries in most cases, and mainly by beneficiaries to the SLPs that have been agreed to with the mining companies out there. The next objective also is to facilitate transformation initiatives. As I said earlier, you know, facilitate projects for women in mining, as well as the youth and the disabled, as I alluded to earlier. Now, focusing now internally, we have we are obliged to develop, review, and implement policies as guided by our the public service regulation, as guided by basic conditions of employment, as well as guided by the Labor Relations Act. And we, on an ongoing basis, you know, review, develop, and make sure that we implement them as required. Our legal support services intends to timelessly respond to our opinions, to appeals and litigation. And as I said, you know, the one focusing, you know, the legal service focus or relevant to mine health and safety that would conduct accident inquiries. The other objective is to implement the national vetting strategy, and this is for the screening of employee and contractors that suppliers or service providers to the department. And as we know, the president in his State of the Nation address emphasized the importance of vetting of both, I think, our employees and our contractors. We are also expected by the public service prescript to comply, you know, through HR legislation to comply to the submission, for instance, of some of the documents, annual documents that we have to submit to them, the financial declarations for SMS members, as well as the performance agreements. On the objective of learning and growth, through our HRD component, we facilitate management and leadership development, and by this we mean, you know, the management development programs that we design, as well as managers completing courses that they have identified through their performance development plans. The filling of funded and vacant positions is another very important area that the department is focusing on, and we're looking to reduce our vacancies by 4%, at least for this year. We're also looking to attract and to develop and retain skills, a very difficult area here, especially in the area of our inspectors. And we're also looking through the attraction, development, and retention of skills, to improve our employment equity and to also reduce, you know, staff turnover, which, as you're aware, also can be really out of our control, because staff turnover here, we're referring to deaths. We're referring also to retirements, which are totally, you know, something that, you know, that it's out of the HR or maybe even the department's control. Our human resource development interventions, as I said earlier, our EDP programs, and as well as our management development courses that we run. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honorable members. And this brings us to the end of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG. Honorable members, there you've got it. Let's interrogate everything, starting from the remarks, opening remarks made by the DG, right through to the last presentation that we were given now. The floor is open to you, Honorable Mangele, Honorable Lucas, Honorable Sonto, Honorable Lorimer.
Before we engage,
yes.
Can I now, I'd just like to get an understanding as to if you determine this all the time out of what is the diet expectation, or do you determine it in terms of the level of the problem that I experienced with my own disability or some direct nature? Because some of these numbers that are put here don't really give a picture as to what extent or at what level is there an improvement in terms of what you are now putting here as your plan of action. And
okay,
it has to come at it to 2012, 2013, 2013, 2014, and so on. You don't really get a sense as to whether there is not necessarily transformational change, but improved levels of performance to determine whether the department is actually getting some of it.
Okay, let's give you an opportunity once we have pointed to those that have raised, and please be specific. Please be specific to the page. I see there you got
okay,
the page.
Yeah, no,
it is more of a general question.
On all the program.
Okay, DJ, you will keep that in mind, that you would first respond to it. What was my flaw? It was Honorable Gemangele, Honorable Lucas, Honorable Sondo, Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Hululu, and then Honorable Bigan. Oh, yes. I'm trying to come back to what I was doing. You will be the last Honorable Honorable. Okay, over to you, my friend.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is on mind health and safety. I don't know whether it's a new style or I'm moving behind times. It seems to be confusing to me. Just now, Faith is still reading page 20 to 35. You see, when Ababum Keys, I'm being confused about this. You are giving a presentation and you refer us to page 100 to 150. It goes with the reading. Whereas this reading, we have just received it now. When do we read it? This referral that you are giving us. That's why I say it's a news. Every one of the presenters is doing that. It goes, please read in conjunction with pages so and so and so and so. That is what is confusing. Meanwhile, you are busy presenting and I'm busy trying to page 39 to 50. To find out what you are saying, and I miss a lot of things. But maybe it's old age, I don't know. But you are saying. You are saying, Babum Khize, you are reducing the injuries. Where did I see this thing? Of reducing injuries. If you want us to read page 30 to 39 to find this reduction of injuries, I'll ask for a favor. Just the key points of how you reduce injuries. And what I'm lost now, I don't know. Oh, percentages of definitely, yeah. Injuries and dangerous occurrences, 20% improvement per annum. That is on page 3 of your presentation. Just to give us an idea of what do you mean by that before we go and read. And from there, I go to the last presentation. These external projects. I always fight about these external projects because we don't know really. Where do you get them? You say you I saw something like media. You go to media. And several times we have said not everybody reads newspapers. Not everybody has a radio or a TV. Referring to rural areas. Apo Ufreda Lela Kona. Nangoku newspaper has Ufreda.
because we don't have them in newspapers. That is why we are always disadvantaged from the rural areas. We don't get, and we have brilliant people, skilled people who rural areas that you can use, that you can train. Can't maybe something else could be done? You said public participation. I know you mean urban. I'm sure you have never gone to the rural area to go and. If so, please let me know which areas have you been. That's my.
Thank you, Chair. I think my first one is transformation. Transformation is that word has been bandied around, and it's tended to be exploited a great deal. We're still in the whole situation getting frantic. It's simply because there's no finances for our people to enter. The entry point is not clear. And when you get in there, all you want to sign, and people sign, they don't know what they're signing. And they're just signing them practically their whole lives away. The other thing is beneficiation. I think, Mr. Chair, we've been talking about this so long. We haven't come to a situation where we are. We do know that when you mine, there's a certain degree of beneficiation. But I think we're not talking the same language. There's the other added beneficiation. From the other end, after you've got the raw material, is the manufacturer of the finished goods. We haven't come to that, and I'm not sure whether I'm on the right track, whether we should be dealing with the department or not. The old order and new order rights, I believe there was a problem, but I'm hoping that has been solved, because there were some people that had gone to court on that issue. And the last one, may I have your permission to just touch on the trip we had to Limpopo? We went to Limpopo, and we met the community, and we met to the mining company. When we got to the mining company, it was not nice. The manager over there, well, first of all, there were police people standing at the bottom of the road, stopping people with guns and that. We went there, and eventually, through the persuasion of our chairman, we got an assurance that he's going to re-employ the community. And I tell you, when we left that place, we were sure that he was going to re-employ the community. But he hasn't done that. Instead, he's importing communities, not importing, getting community workers from another area coming there and not using the community from that area. So I thought that was a bit sad. I think it's something that we should look at, because it's just not right. Thank you, Mr. Chief.
Thank you very much. Honorable Sonto.
Thank you, Chairperson. Program 1 and Program 3. One question. You are intending to have 8,000 inspections. And you are trying to enforce compliance. Inspections. One is interested to understand what prompts you to increase your inspections. Do you perhaps get a rapport from those that you are inspecting? If you do, what is it? Because I sense that something is not going right when you are increasing your inspection targets. Compliance, same thing. You want to enforce compliance. Is that being prompted by a lot of non-compliance that you are now intending to enforce back to you? This might be out of order, but it's something that possibility of assisting the mine health and safety inspectorate. Transport. When a taxi driver kills people, that taxi driver gets arrested for murder. Now, when a mining company kills people, why can't they be arrested for murder? Ain't you, where's the policy? Aren't you looking at a legislative measure that would hold these mining houses accountable for their deeds as strong as that? I know I'm being very, very strong. When a person dies in a mine, inspection made about what nature of death was that, if it's gross negligence, then the legal arrangement takes the course. Ain't you thinking of that? Compliance. We've been talking a lot about non-compliance, and you are now intending to pull the strings. Have you made an example of one company that is non-compliant so that others can see how enforcing you are on your policies? Program 4. You are reviewing the Mine Health and Safety Act. What loopholes did you observe that have prompted you to think about reviewing your Mine Health and Safety Act? Program 5, public participation. I think Uma Masile achieved. What methods are you using when you talk about public participation, and when you talk about your stakeholders, who are these? Are your stakeholders Parliament, mining houses, other departments, perhaps? I am looking at the simplest way of interacting with the public through, yes, we can rule out media, print, and what is the other one? Yes, print and electronic media, and we are interested in that manner where you meet people, you talk to people, you inform people about what you are intending to do, things that are affecting them. The last one, asset mine drainage management. Yes, in 2010, this was in the public domain. We were scared that Johannesburg was going to be contaminated. People in Johannesburg were going to die. Oh, Schmidt, Abaya.
Am I still there?
Where is that DG now? Where is that acid water? The acid water levels, where are they now? I understand that the report is still coming from the interministerial task team, but one would want to know. You succeeded in managing that which was in the public domain, but was still scared. Where is that process now? Where are the water? Where is the water level in Johannesburg, especially in the East Rand? I hope you are not in the East Rand. Yeah. Ownerless and derelict mines, when you are rehabilitating those, this is just a matter of interest, do you create jobs with that process, or do you use the same human, staff that you have when you rehabilitate this ownerless and derelict mine. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you so much. Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two issues. One is on the presentation concerning Program 2, Mine Health and Safety, on page 4. It says, promote health and safety and number of inspections conducted, to be conducted, 8,000. But, you know, I suppose it could be...
Are you not speaking to a mic somewhere?
I don't have one.
Is that better, Mr. But I suppose it's to be divided into mine work program investigations and EMPs and SLPs and the like. But my concern is it sounds like a lot of inspections. But as we know, there are about 5,000 to 6,000 ownerless and derelict sites. How many mines, operational mining sites, are on the list to be investigated? Because, you know, it's one thing if you have 1,000 mines and you've got 8,000 inspections. That means 8 inspections per year average. It's another thing if you have 20,000 mining sites and you have 8,000 inspections, which means if you're lucky, you will only see each mine every third year. So how many mine operational sites are there which need to be visited in terms of these 8,000 sites which you intend doing? That's the first issue. The second issue, it's very interesting to see that the review of the MPRDA amendment book comes up and then the chairman talks it down and then it goes away and then it comes up again. So, you know, it, depending on what I suppose happens at the end of the year with a certain Congress, we might see it faster or not. But when is the department's indication when these MPRDA and the Mine Health and Safety Act amendment bills are to be tabled? Because I know it's certified apparently by the legal state law advisors, but it still has to be tabled. Well, has it already been tabled and not been referred to the committee? Because I haven't seen anything being tabled. So I take it it's been certified, it goes back to Cabinet, Cabinet then decides to table it, I understand. So when is that, how far are we in that process of tabling these two amendment bills? Thank you.
We will surely extend the invitation to the Congress in December in first date.
If I could advise you otherwise, I'd gratefully tip.
Okay. Honorable Khulunu.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also thank the presenters on their presentations. Although most of the questions that I wanted to ask, Chair, have been asked, but I'll just ask two for clarity. Yeah, absolutely. No, now, there is this question that I want to raise of the illegal mining. You know, some of us, we come from mining towns. So I realize that the illegal mining is still taking place there. And I just wanted to check on your budget, because that's a mining, mine health and safety issue as well.
No, they're thieves.
Huh?
They're thieves.
Oh, it's crime.
Criminal.
Okay. Yeah. So, what I...
allow you flow of thinking.
Thank you very much for the protection, Chair. Yeah. So now, the question of illegal mining, I wonder how much have you budgeted for, and is it your responsibility actually to see to it that those disused mine shafts actually are closed? Because the problem there, I realize that there's some small onion holes where these thieves get into. So you need to close those shafts, actually, those disused shafts. That would be the first one. The second one on the mineral regulation. In fact, according to the MPRDA, if one wants to acquire a permit or a right to mine, actually he or she has to go to the community out there
think you've raised a very important issue. I'm coming to you, Honorable Bilani, on this matter of the illegal mining. At the end of this term, around June 18 to 22, if I'm not mistaken, we will be visiting Free State. Most probably Bloemfontein and Welkom. Whilst we'll be doing our normal oversight in terms of checking the compliance to the MPRDA, the Mine Health and Safety Act, Mining Charter, and all of those legislative provisions, one matter that we'll be dealing with is the illegal mining. We know that this is not a child's game. People were saying to you, these are thieves. It's true. It had to take government to establish an interministerial committee, which mostly comprises of security cluster, including our ministry. It's a dangerous game, as you know it from Mpumalanga. As we would be going there, last time when we were there, honorable members who were there would remember, in one of the mines, we were not allowed to go down. Literally not allowed to go down. It was not because the mine management did not want us to go down, but they told us that there are Zamazamas down there who are waiting for you. They heard that you are coming. Once you are there, once you arrive at a shaft, at the moment you alight from the cage, from the lift, you will then indeed be held hostage. Similar thing can happen. We were also nearly ambushed when we were at what's this hostel in Bloemfontein? At Velko, G Hostel. We were nearly ambushed there. So I'm saying we're going back there, and part of what we're going to do is to deal with this matter of illegal mining. So we would ask the department, therefore, to assist the committee session to activate intelligence arrangements so that on arriving there, we are not exposed and made vulnerable to these tactics that are used by the Zamazamas. We know that police get engaged physically underground. Those fellows don't shy away from mounting an attack on the police personnel who would be going down. So some of the police are quite reluctant to go down because to them it's walking into the fire. So we would ask the department that within that arrangement of interministerial task teams, if you could then assist the committee section to then be able to protect e-members. Otherwise, we would be just walking into a situation that would be beyond our control. Honorable Bigani.
Chair, thank you. I think I've got a lot of questions, but I'm going to try and pick them up. The reason why I was asking the question I was asking is because I was just thinking of the fact that in terms of the mining charter, we haven't really concluded issues that you said are being left out of the mining charter. So I'm just wondering on some of the issues, like there's something about a mining strategy for women, whereas we are challenged with the fact that the clause, I think, that's going to be excluded, should it be, that's going to be excluded from the mining charter concerning women in mining, particular when it comes to equity. Now, I was just wondering, looking at, I think there was a page there that said something about women in mining, and I just saw a one, and I wondered if it's only one woman now that's going to benefit or what's going to happen. But what I'm trying to say is, Chair, that there's no coordination at time, if I look at the plan, in trying to determine what I was talking about, that there's actually an improvement in performance, or an improvement or a clear show of transformation in mining issues, with an example of women being one of them. That is why I was asking that question, Chair. So in a way, I'm going to be a bit problematic when I ask my questions, because I still don't figure out how do you determine the medium-term targets. It's almost as if at times you just put something there, just to say, put the way I feel in us understanding as to what is the determining factor for you to say an appropriate figure or percentage has been placed for a particular target and it's sufficient, or it's going to be effective as an outcome. There's other issues also concerning, I think it's under regulation, where there's also going to be some issues concerning to beneficiation, but you find that you, I don't know how you decide on the targets, I don't know. Maybe it's my little understanding when it comes to that. Let me just leave it a little bit, because I'll wait until the question is answered, and if Chair will allow me to engage, then I will. The MQA, you mentioned under MQA that there's going to be possible improvements in line with accreditation and so on and identifying universities. I was just wondering, with what the Minister of Higher Education announced yesterday, that there's going to be a university established, I think, in the Northern Cape, and I don't know where, in Mpumalanga. Are you part of that planning? Because if you remember in the past, we once indicated that it would be nice to see that, especially the mining areas, that one of the universities that are put up are universities that are going to be specific to training people in issues of mining or getting a qualification at a university level in mining. So I was just wondering if those plans do correlate with the accreditation plans that you have to say that one of the universities identified must actually be a speciality in mining engineering or technicalities and so on. And then corporate services under your legal support, we once also mentioned that even there I have a problem with that percentage of not understanding how do you get to that target. And where you find a situation that from 2012 to 2015 the target remains the same, Gandhi, are you not going to be assessing if there's an increase or decrease in litigations, for example, you know, to determine a percentage? Maybe my understanding there is also not correct. But sometimes the standard figure that's put there makes me query as to whether are we saying there's an improvement, because if we're going to have an outcry in terms of the budget to say that there's too many litigations or it's costing the department, which could end up resulting in figures in the budget being used unnecessarily elsewhere, how do you then determine that part of your plan or part of the performance we envisage will be showing an improvement when it comes to issues of litigation? Because if you remember, we even requested that if we can have something that lays out what are these litigation issues that are there within the department as a whole to determine whether they are increasing or they are decreasing or the challenges are being addressed in improving the situation. Then, I don't know if it falls under regulation, but I suspect so. There's an issue in the Eastern Cape where you find that there's unidentified mines, I'll put it that way. Now, when you talk about the ownerless and derelict mines, it came to mind that sometimes it might not be mines that have been just left from the legacy issues, but it could be new areas of exploration. Is there such a budget for such areas, and what support systems are there? And in terms of regulation, like we know for a fact that, especially in the Transkei area, when roads were built sometimes, the contractor would just stop along the road and identify crushed stone. Crushed stone is part of mining, isn't it? Go in and crush the stone there, put it on the road, and charge government all the money it requires. What exactly is being done in that area? Because I think there is an indication of coal, there is an indication of crash stone at high levels, which could be increased employment for us in the Eastern Cape. Whereabouts could we possibly fit that into our performance, into your performance plan, maybe it's not mine, into your performance plan in terms of improving the issue you were discussing on job creation, for one, and the fact that you are regulating in terms of what should be happening in mining areas. And then lastly, there is also perhaps some areas in the Free State again where you find a situation of possible mines opening up. Are you aware of those? And with those possible mines being opening up, where does it put you in terms of your in issues of, I don't know if I might say it's investigative areas of illegal mining, or is it an area of concern to the department? Because it could end up working against what we are hoping would be regulated properly in the mining sector. And you might find that you are missing it, and by the time it blows out, it's illegal mining, or there are large sums of money that are being lost economically because of allowing such situations to proliferate. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Lorimer.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Not much left unasked, but Program 2 Safety, slide 5. When you say you're going to review and implement certificates of competency model, what does that mean? It makes it sound like you're going to make it easier to pass the exams. Please assure me that that's not so. Program 3 Regulation, slide 7. Your adherence to prescribed time frames, 70% seems low to me. Could you give us some information about why it's 70% and what's the historic performance in this regard? And the only other thing was on policy program 4, my colleague talked about the report on acid mine drainage. Is this going to be a final report, or is it just a progress report? Is it going to give us timelines? Is it going to recommend or give a final answer on treatment methods? And perhaps you can, I realize this might be out of your control, but maybe you can tell us when we might see this report. Thanks, that's it.
Thank you very much. You've got very limited time to respond to all those questions. We'll rely on you to optimally use the 10 minutes remaining for response. Thank you.
No, sorry. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. The first issue which was raised was Honorable began on the target. And how do we come with this target, performance target? What we do, we often look at historic performance of the organization and try to improve on that where we can. But also sometimes you find that we would like to improve, but we don't have the resources to improve on that. For I can give a good example. I mean, we know the whole issue of ownerless and derelict mines, okay? That we have got this number of ownerless and derelict mines, I mean, thousands of them in terms of the report which has been released. But we just don't have the resources to go out there and rehabilitate all of them. So we'll just look at the funds which we have and say, based on these available funds and resources which we have, what can we do as an organization? But some other targets which are related, for instance, to mine health and safety, it will be like we look at historic and say, where are we now in the country in terms of this instance? For instance, in terms of, can you give an example of that?
Okay, I just need to give an example of the silica dust level. I mean, because the baseline that we use is 2010-11 figures, the percentage compliance was about 70%. So within the medium term period, we are looking at we looked at the average percentage compliance achieved in the last 5 to 10 years to say, generally, what has been the mines compliance levels. And hence we came up and saying for each year, then it should be 10% to us to reach 100% of those figures to comply with the provisions of the law. And that's how we relate to this.
The other one, there was an issue which was raised by Honorable Mangen on the referral to pages. Yeah, I thought maybe it was confusing. I actually told my team before the meeting that referring to this and this, next time when we come here, all these documents must be properly bound, and then they must be. we agree. They will apologize for all this referring to this speech without ensuring that everything is properly bound. We would like to apologize for that. And then the issues of reducing injuries by 20%. What top 20?
I think it's also based on in 2008 we had the Mine Health and Safety Summit where all the stakeholders came together, unions, ourselves and business, and say our ultimate goal is to achieve zero harm on all my employees. So we will look at injuries, we'll look at fatalities, actually look at dangerous occurrences, as I've said, dangerous occurrences, there's no name casualty. So for us to achieve zero harm from that time, by how much percentage can we do that? Given as well, we've looked at the history of achievements of the industry as well. We've looked at that as reference to say in the last 10 years, 20 years, especially the period that we have started with the Mine Health and Safety Act, that is 1997. What has been the performance? And then what measures can we really take to make sure that we achieve similar levels as the other countries in the world, that we benchmarked those figures against. We benchmarked against Australia, benchmarked against USA and Canada as well. So the percentage reduction rate was based on we want to achieve those levels. In fact, the coal sector is almost achieving those levels, especially they are doing better in terms of numbers. They are doing better than the USA now. So I think we want the whole, all the sectors to clearly come to that particular level that we aspire to.
Are you on track in achieving your zero harm rate by 2013 in terms of the milestones that were agreed in that summit?
I think what we are seeing is that there is a significant improvement that we are seeing as, with the coal sector. We are almost on, we are on track there. But the challenge has been sustainability. That has been the challenge within the particular sector, especially with the gold and platinum sector. You would have realized in the last 3 or 4 months we've given the gold and platinum sector a lot of attention to make sure that there's a significant improvement and we try to achieve that milestone by 2030. But I think the challenge that we have agreed upon is the issue of complacency and sustainability. We are seeing improvement, but not good enough. And that's where the challenge is. And then we are working together with the relevant stakeholders.
There was the issue of saying how do we reach rural areas? Do we really go to rural areas to provide them with the necessary information? We want to address it, Ms. Kamela.
On the issue of external projects that you referred to, they are two-pronged. So others are community-related, which are linked to the SLPs, external projects. And then we have our other the external projects linked to the directorate special projects and outreach programs. Now, the special projects and outreach programs target mainly women, the vulnerable groups in corporate services. They will target women and the youth and the disabled. Now, the ones that I said are linked to the SLPs, it will be with communications. And this is where, rather with linked with SLPs through mineral regulation. Those are the ones where now we have public participation. For instance, to go and find out from the communities how they view the projects that have happened around them, around the communities. And indeed, yes, they have been going out to mining areas in the rural areas. We have, in the last quarter, visited Limpopo, the northwest, Mpumalanga, the Northern Cape. I know there were five. Which is the other one? And KZN, we had five public participation projects. We're actually looking right now to consolidate the reports on what issues came out of those public participation, what questions were asked, you know, and what responses and what we then as a department will be doing, you know, moving forward to assist the communities. Yes, indeed, they have taken place those in the rural areas. the public participation program. So the communication that we were referring to would be, as you said, to both stakeholders, as in mining companies, as in the general public, but in particular also to communities through public participation programs, not through the electronic media, not through, yeah, so we do go speak to them, as you said, one-on-one, yes, to get, you know, to have interaction with them directly.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Honorable Lucas asked issues around fronting, issues around old order rights and new order rights, have they been addressed, are there problems there? And there was also the trip to Limpopo. I'll ask the DDG.
Thank you, DG and Honorable Members. I'll start with the issue relating to fronting. And what is the department doing to address the root causes, which amongst others relate to lack of funding as a challenge that is being faced by new entrants into this sector? Whilst acknowledging that funding is a challenge, and the President in the State of the Nation address even indicated measures being taken by government to criminalize this, at the departmental level, we've been applying our minds around what are the other interventions that we need to put in place to assist historically disadvantaged, you know, to as a way of also addressing and preventing, if one were to put it that way, future fronting from happening. Having said that, I need to also indicate that there's also the other deliberate form of fronting, where if you were to look at the fronters, there's no justification for them to front because they have the resources. Because fronting does not just manifest itself in the form of them participating because they cannot afford to fund. For others, it becomes a matter of convenience, if I do put it that way, because it's an income-generating activity of sorts. So we would also urge that we be assisted in condemning that, because it becomes a challenge, because some see it as a way of making like easy money. But we are acknowledging, and some of the things that we are doing is to have engagement with the entrants in the mining sector to understand how they can also be assisted. Because what we had found in, through talking to some of the people, especially those that do often raise candidly the issues with us, is access to information and knowledge and information sharing. Because admittedly, mining is a skills-intensive area. And if you are entering the space, you need to be prepared to be in it for the long haul. It's not the short-term type of an activity. Regarding the old order and the new order, right, and the, as Honorable Lucas was indicating, there were some court cases also, and just want to understand progress. Honorable Members would recall that we had a process of embarking on a moratorium during which we conducted comprehensive audits as part of cleaning up our systems and data. And during that process, the Minister had really been on record as calling on all those that had stakes or issues to come forward so that as part of the cleanup, we can address whatever issues any right holder, could be old order right holder or new order right holder, might be having part of that clean up. Those that did come up to raise issues through a process of addressing what was then called double granting, we dealt with those issues as part of cleaning up our administrative systems. Regarding matters that might be before court, I would not have the specifics right now. If Honorable Member has some specific, I would really appreciate, we'll investigate and provide feedback to the Honorable Member. Safe to say that in the manner in which we've been addressing and continue to address administrative issues, though informed by transparency and the respect for the rule of law, so there hasn't been a process that really was undertaken which is contrary to what is provided for in the MPRD. Regarding the trip to Limpopo that the honorable member referred to, if I'm correct, it relates to the oversight visit that the members of the honorable members of the committee undertook to Mandashoek there, yes, at one operation they called Pokatawa. I need to give an assurance to the honorable members that as a department we have integrated the outcome of the visit of the honorable members into our working program within the Limpopo regional office, to an extent that there have been several engagements that we have had. We even have a task team in place comprising ourselves, concerned members or groups from that area as well as the mine management. And if honorable member, we can, in the interest of time, you know, we can just brief the honorable member in detail. We are aware of the issue relating to the dismissed workers who needed to be re-employed. There were some differences because some members wanted to be others wanted to be re-employed, and others just wanted to be reinstated, which obviously has got various consequences for the mine. There is a plan that we have seen by the mine to begin a process of re-employing them, obviously going through your normal HR process of your screening. But in the interest of time, I can provide the honorable member with the details with regard to that. Thanks.
Thank you. The other issue relates to beneficiation. Definitely a strategy was developed, beneficiation strategy has been developed for the country, and it was approved by cabinet. And two value chains, implementation for the two value chains has been completed, that is the iron ore one and the energy mineral. There are three where we are still working on, that is the water catalyst, the PGMs one, jewelry one, and also the titanium one. We have got task teams which have been put in place. Why? Because we realize these things, you know, they involve other departments. If you look at the mandate of the department, it's basically to focus on the mining environment. But beyond that, in terms of manufacturing and the like, you know, you have to bring in departments like DTI. So we have got task teams which are basically involved in the DTI issues of manufacturing, if there are incentives which must be considered. Those are beyond our scope. It will have to come from DTI programs and the others. And also energy issues, security of supply and all those things. These are energy issues. We have got Department of Energy that are also involved in those tasks. And I think with time, we will brief honorable members on progress with regards to this tasks. We will be going to cabinet to present this other three implementation plans, and we will be kept abreast on developments with regards to beneficiation. It's something which is very important for the country. We all know about it, because if we really want to maximize our returns as a country in terms of exploitation of the mineral, we have to focus on that area. There are lots and lots of opportunities, but it's not a simple thing. And I think the minister has on several occasions said, look, we are not going to force miners to mine. To beneficiate. You know, see? We know that basically miners, some miners would like to focus on mining. We'll allow them to focus on that area. When it comes to beneficiation, you might want to bring other people to be involved in this regard. Let's move on to Honorable Sondo's issue. There's another one which you raised, that is the 8,000 inspections. We needed clarity on the 8,000 inspections. I think you want to touch on that one. And you could as well touch on compliance. Maybe give an example of where there was non-compliance, because I think it was raised that, look, can you just give an indication of where there was no compliance? What do we do? Okay, we have got the legislation which is in place there. We try to work within that. I think you'll give an example of that.
Thank you. The inspections that we do are the main inspections where an inspector just go, for instance, to a mine for the first time, I think it will also speak to what the question about what engagement. And then if there are transgressions, there's another form of inspection, there's a follow-up type of inspection. That's why we plan, and the way we plan inspection, we look at the history of the mine in terms of non-compliance issues that were revealed before, and we look at the mine in terms of safety-related matters, either injuries, accidents and fatalities, and also health-related matters as well. So all these inspections include every form of visit that we have. It can be on health, it can be on safety, and to ensure that there's non-compliance. We further break down, we actually classify the mines in terms of the risk. So if you look at those issues, non-compliance, safety, and health performance, there is a form of risk that we are looking at. So we see, as let's say, some of the gold mines are more riskier because of the accidents and because of silicosis and so forth. Similarly, platinum and some parts of the coal mines as well. So those mines will be visited more frequently than the other mines, right? The smaller mines like brickworks, quarries, especially brickworks and sandworks, they are not that risky compared to, you know, those gold and platinum mines. So I make an example. The high-risk mine, maybe per month we can visit, and a safety inspector can visit them twice or thrice. And we must also have, one thing that we should also have in mind is the fact that some of these mines, for instance, they employ, one shaft employ about 4,000 people, and they have about 300 panels and maybe three times more development ends. So hence we give them more attention than the others. So that 8,000 really is based on the resources as well as the DG and the CFO has previously indicated that with the resources that we have been given, these are the number of inspections that we can do. Now, from the outcome of the inspection, some of the non-compliance that we have realized or we have seen that some mines will convey or transport employees in a cage which has a shaft which is unsafe. Unsafe, I'm looking at the shaft barrier. Let's say you have a 2 kilometer shaft. The law requires that an engineer must examine that shaft every week. But what we have determined is that some of the engineers, they feel the outcomes of that inspection. We find that maybe there's blocks of rocks that can fall into that shaft. Now, you don't want, for any mine, they know that it's a no-no. Because if you have an unsafe shaft and you have a cage transporting about 100 people, there's a huge disaster that can really happen. We have mines that, from the non-compliance, that we have mines that will send 4,000 people underground without a single secondary outlet. Now, if you can still remember, about 2 years ago, there were about 33 mine workers that were trapped in Chile for 69 days because of the lack, one of the reasons, the lack of a secondary outlet. So these are the things that we are also raising. Lastly, we will have a manager deciding that they will blast underground with 60 people underground, and it's a hard rock mine. I mean, it can be disastrous. We have an engineer who decides to convey employees in a shaft that is flooded, resulting in someone drowning because of that. You know, it's a serious, especially with the gold and platinum. Those are the challenges that we are facing with the gold and platinum mines, and we are giving them attention accordingly.
Thank you. There's also the issue around the Mine Health and Safety Act review.
You did not give us, though, sorry, DG, the example of actions that you have taken on account of non-compliance.
Thanks, sir. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. The examples that we have been taking, and hence, you know, there's been such an outcry with some of the gold mines and then the platinum mines. And in fact, you know, some of these mines have about 1,000 people killed in the last 20 years. And if you look at the profile, it's the same thing. So the examples that of actions that have been taken, for instance, there's been recently an incident that has been referred to in the newspaper of one of the employees who passed away. We did an inquiry, and we made recommendations for prosecution, including general managers, mine managers, and so forth. It's under review currently, and I'm sure you'd have seen it. The actions that we are taking in, where necessary, we have stopped
unsafe working areas. In other words, we not stop completely, because the impression that is being given is that we are stopping mines. Is that withdraw people from unsafe working areas and examine, make safe, and investigate system failures. System failures is whether the transgression was as a result of poor supervision, poor support, poor training, poor whatever, you know. And then they come and we discuss those things. And on that particular issue as well, one of the mine came and presented. They found out that about 40% of their working partners were not supported up to standard. That's disastrous as well. So those are the actions that we are taking. Lastly, we also issued an admin fine. One mining company was issued with an admin fine of about 1.5 million on two transgressions. So, but we are not only critical, but we also engage, you know, to try to raise awareness on these challenges that we are facing.
Honorable members, I think the DDG also wants to give another example from Mineral and Promotion Development Act, from the MPRDA Act.
The targets that we have around increasing compliance inspections are indeed informed by historical data that demonstrate that there is room for improvement in the area of compliance. They are clearly those operations that are not compliant. And some of the things that we do, we found this to also have been very much effective, have been around conducting unannounced inspections, which we have found, because in that case, the right holder, because compliance must be integrated into your normal day-to-day operation. It's not a tick box. As the chief inspector was indicating, there are hazards and consequences, not only to the employees, but also to communities and the environment. What then we had found in some instances where we conducted inspections were cases where there was flagrant or clear disregard of the provisions of the license itself, ranging from environmental management program, which is approved, where they were clearly not adhering to that, to instances where you'd find that even the mining itself, in terms of the approved mining program, the tonnages do not tally with what you find on site. Honorable members would also recall instances where you'd conducted oversight visits to even Northern Cape, some of the sites, where you'd find that the right holder has been issued with the prospective right, but when you get to site, the right holder is actually mining under a prospecting right. They leave environmental liabilities, so we bequeath this liability to future generations, because the financial guarantee or provision that we're sitting with, it's intended for a prospecting right, which for all intents and purposes is meant for exploration or searching of the mineral so that it can quantify it. But when you start mining, and then you have mined out the resource in the area, we're sitting, for example, with 300,000 for prospecting. You have mined, you've created a liability of 10 million. Already there is a dispute. And then it creates all kinds of challenges. So this is the benefit that we have from compliance inspections. Also from compliance inspections, we found instances where some right holders were operating using expired rights. And then we took action, and then naturally the criminal, there is no right. It's like driving with an expired or unroadway car. There is no dispute with regard to that. So we took action, and then the company stopped operating there and then. We called in the police, and we dealt with the operation. And so we basically are emphasizing the fact that the targets that we have put in here, yes, are informed by the concern that we have around compliance. The compliance levels would be better. I need to indicate that while saying this, there are examples where some right holders or companies are making concerted efforts to improve, and have taken to heart the need to integrate compliance into their business imperatives. The other area where it found to have been an area of concern necessitating us to conduct more inspections has been around accountability on the part of the leadership of mines, where you would find that you know, and it's a challenge that the mine health and the chief inspector also has, you'd find that the head of the operation is so-and-so, but when you go there looking for that person for purpose of accountability, it is somebody else who just got given that responsibility. And in the end, you toy in between the two in terms of who is ultimately responsible, which basically implies that compliance is not being taken seriously. Sadly, you then find that on issues that impact on commitments and undertakings to communities around social and labor plan, it becomes one of the casualties, where you find that there isn't a dedicated person who is responsible for actual implementation, who can go and account and engage the communities around social and labor plans, which fits to some of the complaints honorable members will receive from time to time, and or instances where there are illegal mining activities that are, you know, engaged in by some of the right holders, and or non-compliance with your environmental management program. Things that basically wouldn't want to see happening in our sector. Thanks. But in a nutshell, we have got examples where rights end up being revoked, and or operations end up being suspended purely because there has been non-compliance. Thanks.
Thank you. Mine Health and Safety Act. Why are we reviewing? The issue here is we realize also that it needs to be aligned with MPRDA, you know, for instance, definition of a mine. These are some of the issues which we looked at. You might find that MPRDA defines a mine in this way, and this side they look at it in different ways. And there are also some of the court cases which inform us. But what we have done in the department is that, look, let's put together a team, internal team of the department, which will look at these issues. What are the key issues which of concern, and where can we strengthen? I think the whole objective is to ensure that we improve health and safety on our mines. There who are still at that stage where we are looking at the document, and then so you'll get a feedback on it. Once we have decided on which areas we are going to work on, we will then engage the committee and also go through the processes of cabinet. With regards to acid mine drainage, I think I need to clarify something here. I think my colleague is acting there, so there's something. With regards to the report has been released. You know, I think he was referring to that old report, which all of you know about it. I was actually going to address that. The report has been released. What is happening now, there is an interministerial committee, which is chaired by the Minister of Water Affairs. We participate in that forum. This is basically to look at the whole issue of acid mine drainage in the Witwatersrand area, that is looking at the water which is rising there. Okay. But we, as a department, we have engaged a Council for Geosciences. You know, it's in their area in terms of geosciences. They continuously do research on acid mine drainage in the country. There will be information reports coming from there. Those reports will be public information. I think that I need to clarify that point. On where the water is, I don't know that, but Council for Geoscience, in fact, Peter did not get one of the scientists to join us here. They know exactly where the water is. In fact, they just look at their cell phone on 24 hours. They monitor the situation on 24 hours. After the meeting, I can just phone one of them. They just check on the cell phone. They know where the level is. So the situation is definitely under control. They know what is happening. I'm 100% sure of that. they can just, on the cell phone, they can get the level of the water at a particular point, what is happening. We had to go that route because of, you know, people were anxious. Things are going to go wrong. Then he said, Council for Geoscience, come with a system whereby, you know, the public can know what is happening at any moment. So they can tell you, you can phone them, they'll tell you where the level of water is. Yes. Certainly.
350
You know it already. That is, so they've got it. So you can say any day if you fall.
It doesn't not report on this to strike.
Exactly. It is an excellent way of monitoring the situation. Okay, we'll find out what they're doing now. They also come and present here on regular basis. The review of the MPRD, I think Honorable Smith mentioned, where is it? Honorable Smith, you said, where is it?
Yeah.
We are at the point whereby we're still internally discussing the document. We will be taking it once the minister is comfortable. The minister must be comfortable. It has to first go to cabinet, and once it's gone to cabinet, and then it will go through the processes of parliament. We hope that will happen during the course of this year.
So after the Congress.
Mr. Smith, the Speaker of Congress.
No, let's clarify that. The process is within the department, and the delays are as a result of the amount of work in the department. Otherwise, Congress will come and go. Even if we amend the MPRDA this year, if Congress so feels as a ruling party that you still need to further amend, then they will then have a second round of amendments. For now, we've given them a green light to correct whatever they believe needs to be corrected. And when they are ready, bring it to Parliament so that we can process it here. So once they are ready, I'm sure, as the indication is given, once it's been to cabinet, it will then find its way here. The holdup, according to the department and the ministry, has been that there's been quite an extensive consultation with the stakeholders that ensued since the time the first draft was produced. So, but we'll wait patiently. Once they are satisfied, they will bring those amendments to us. Then at the Congress, if we decide otherwise, then Parliament would have to then follow suit. That's the beauty of being a ruling party.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Honorable Hululu mentioned issues around illegal mining. Whether we budget for illegal mining. We certainly don't budget for illegal mining. It's a very difficult situation, but you are always faced with it as a department at the end of it. We have to go there and visit the places, look at how we can address it. But we certainly don't budget for illegal mining. We try to address the problems because these are community people, they are part of South Africans. We go there and try to see where we can address whenever there are problems. The Chief Inspector of Mines is always there. His team is always trying to help wherever we can help, especially when we are faced with challenges sometimes. But where we can identify the owners, we try to engage with the owners and say to the owners, sort this problem. Because this illegal mining is taking place in your own area. But we also, I think, for instance, in the Free State, there was a forum which was put together to address this issue. And it has been relatively successful in terms of addressing issues of illegal mining. I think they will always be there. You know, it's an illegal activity, and sometimes when people see that, we can make easy money, they go there and try to make easy money. But also, when these mines close down, people see an opportunity of going back. For instance, the issue of Grootvlei, in Grootvlei, in the East Rand. Because that mine got liquidated, or it was in the process of being liquidated. There were problems, the mine was not operating, and our people saw an opportunity of going there and trying to mine there, because once a mine is not operating sometime, you find that the security system collapses there, and once the security system collapses there, it's an opportunity for illegal activities to take place. Issues of ownerless mines, I've already stated that, I already talked to that. When it comes to ownerless mines and those which we can identify as being owned by people, okay, when we can identify a mine as being owned by a person, those people must take full responsibility of whatever happens there. But where we cannot identify the owner, obviously the state has to address the issue, especially in terms of rehabilitation and the like. And that's how we approach everything. It's all around polluter pays principle. Beneficiation strategy, we have the Honorable Bikane talked about mining charter. A mining charter. We want to address the mining charter issue.
Thank you, Honorable Smith. We agree that there are some outstanding issues flowing from the mining charter that still need to be addressed. And Honorable Bikane raised the issue of women in mining as one of the issues that we still need to flag. But here, one of the focal areas was also around an internal focus, as well as some of the projects that are implemented within corporate services, with a special focus on women in mining. But we take note of the fact that there is a need, as Honorable Member was indicating earlier, to do the necessary harmonization and alignment, just to ensure that we don't have some of the, how do I put, we can have clarification and better alignment of documents and processes. There's also another question, whilst I'm still responding to the questions that were asked by Honorable Bikane, that we asked relating to first the Free State, and I'll then come to the Eastern Cape, around new mining sites that may be cropping up and whether the department is aware, and also whether that too is a function of increase in mining, legalized or formal mining activity within the province. The response to that is yes, there are new mining sites that are opening up, but equally there's a challenge around illegal mining that we constantly encounter, where you then would find that there are some mining sites that are currently starting to gain momentum, and when we do inspections in some cases, we do find that some of them may not be licensed, and they fall in that category of illegal mining. So they speak to the importance of conducting inspections, but also speak to the importance of the partnerships and the role that society should play in reporting those sites, so that we can engage or liaise with the law enforcement agencies for them to take action. And I must report that we are receiving cooperation from communities. As and when they report, we follow up together with colleagues from the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate and ensure that action gets taken with regard to those identified or reported sites. There were also questions asked with regard to the Eastern Cape and some areas where you then find that when there's a road construction project, people would then sell gravel. And then find that some have not even applied, or are not in possession of mining permits or whatever the case might be. It is one of the challenges that we've identified, and we're dealing with that through also working with the municipalities, because you then find that in some cases the recipient of the project is an organ of government or the state. And then we're finding that there are benefits through working with them as part of improving cooperative governance, where we're able to root out some of these things that really are not worth being in our sector. but it is a challenge that we have noted. It also speaks broadly to the challenge of illegal mining that we are having as a country. There was also, through you, DJ, there was also another question that was asked by Honorable Schmidt with regard to a plan and identified places for inspection, which I just felt that I needed to also respond. How we, on our side as mineral regulation, identify or decide to select sites that we are going to inspect for a particular, during a particular year, is we also do a risk assessment. And later on, we then prepare an inspection plan which has to be approved by the Director General. And we link that to our spending plan so that we're able to link our strategy to our budget. That's how we do it. Over and above that, there may be instances where communities may complain, or we may receive a report relating to a non-compliance or an incident that is worth investigating. We then incorporate that into our plan, and then we go and do the necessary inspections. Outside that, there will be certain targeted inspections that we will do jointly with mine health and safety, including those that we will do as part of increasing the compliance levels on an unannounced basis. And, you know, maybe because we have received reports, or we just want to see how industry is performing. And we found those to be beneficial. Thank you.
Can we check, DG, how far down the line are you? We are becoming unfair to members.
Okay.
Because at 2 o'clock we must be sitting at the EPCs. They didn't have lunch. So can we get an indication and pick up speed? Gotcha. All right.
There was also the issue which was raised by Honorable Bikane on crushing the stones. When somebody just goes and opens a quarry there for crushing. If this person hasn't got the license, that person is an illegal miner. It's an illegal activity. They're not supposed to do it. They must get a license from the department. There are instances where the department would give people permission to do it, especially municipalities and the like. But generally, any person who goes out there and opens a quarry and sells a quarry and for crushing is not allowed. They must get the permission from the department. Because there are also issues around environmental liability. And also people can be injured while working there. You know, it's basically an illegal activity. And then the other one was on competency regulations, competency tests. I think Honorable Norman said, are we lowering the standards or not? Definitely we are not lowering the standards. You can talk to me.
No, we are definitely not going to lower the standards. Really, we want the universities or technical to help us. For some of the exams are very subjective, they are oral, and maybe they have a better way of setting syllabi and exams as well. And also the issue of the question asked by Honorable Bigan on the support of on the university and in Mpumalanga. Whatever we do as MQA, we are guided by the DHET, the Higher Education and Training Department as well. Once it is established, we'll support it obviously through issuing bursaries to the relevant students in Mpumalanga, and also there is a program that we are looking at assisting lecturers, especially to improve the transformation as well. So we'll also assist in that regard, whatever assistance that they require.
The last one, Chairperson, is on consultation with the community.
Yes, thank you. The question from Honorable Holo related to instances where there may be complaints that right holders did not consult with communities, and if the department is in receipt of this, what do we do? There's a provision in the MPRDA, it's called Section 10, which says that an applicant is required to consult with interested and affected parties as part of the application process for either prospecting right, mining right, and various other types of rights and permits. Now, The results of such consultation must be submitted to the department to inform the process of evaluation or adjudication of a lodged or submitted right or application. If after a right has been granted or issued ultimately, then we receive this complaint, we go through a process of first putting it to the right holder, because at that time, you know, it's almost like at that time it is an allegation, you know, and then we go through a process of putting it, and then they have to prove, and then matters get investigated. If it were found that indeed the right holder did not consult, remedial measures get taken, which may then result ultimately in the cancellation of the right. I need to indicate that there's been precedence in this case. If we were to, honorable members would recall, there was a famous Bengwenyama case where the matter ended up at the Constitutional Court around the issue and the quality of consultations. What we then did as a department, drawing from that, we then developed guidelines to further assist applicants on the area of consultation, because admittedly it is an area where we had found that there is a need for improvement so that consultation gets enhanced or strengthened. Further on, even in the internal discussions around the amendment of the MPRDA, it is an area where we really need to strengthen, so that we are able to ensure that we don't have this kind of challenge going forward. Thank you.
That's the end, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members.
Thank you, TG and your team, and thank you very much from the Honorable Members. I think what is left of us now is that since you've given us quite elaborate answers to our questions, is to then accept the strat plan and indeed acknowledge the budget vote in terms of the figures that you have displayed to us. The budget vote will be discussed and finally decided upon in the chamber, in Parliament. We're discussing it on the 10th and later around June, then it will be tabled formally in the National Assembly. Can we get a mover and a seconder to then approve the strategy? Honorable Hululu, you move to adopt. Seconder? Honorable Sonto, you could not persuade your next door neighbors. Honorable members, thank you very much for your time, and we're meeting again next week, and we hope that, not even hope, we will not be subjected to the same problem that we have been subjected to this morning. If they can't find a suitable venue, the instruction is very clear that they have to look for a venue outside. So that we're not playing. We lost almost an hour this morning, completely, because of this shunting around between venues and the issue of documents and so forth. So, Chair, thank you very much. Go and enjoy what remains of your lunch. We'll meet you at the EPC. Thanks to the department as well.